This podcast was recorded Thursday, June 9th. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Like the January 6th investigation hearings will change anyone's mind about what really happened that day at the Capitol. Well, at least we'll get it all on the record. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those shrewd politicians, those Snollygosters who look for your vote. I'm Mike Thompson. Steve Brown is off this week. This week, we're going to do something different. As you may know, I host a weekly political TV show on WOSU called Columbus on the Record. It airs Friday nights at 8:30 and most Sunday afternoons at 5 o'clock. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the over-the-air television thing or the real-time cable TV broadcast, it's also available online and on the PBS app. Well, last week we had two really good discussions on two topics that have dominated our political world this spring: what to do about gun violence and what to do about gerrymandering. Our panelists were Darryl Rowland, senior reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, Sam Gresham, former head of the Columbus Urban League and now with Common Cause Ohio, and former state rep Gene Krebs, a Republican from far western Ohio. First up, our discussion about Ohio's gun laws and the latest move to loosen them further.
A week and a day after a gunman shot and killed 19 children and two teachers at a Texas elementary school, the Ohio legislature made it easier for Ohio teachers to carry guns in their classrooms. Lawmakers gave final approval to a bill that would set 24 hours of training as the standard for employees and volunteers to carry guns in schools. That's down from the roughly 700 hours required under a ruling from the Ohio Supreme Court. Supporters of the move say it will protect kids from active shooters. Opponents say it will not stop shooters and will make classrooms more dangerous. Mike DeWine promises to sign the bill, even though he has said he wants to do more to regulate guns.
What I have an obligation of doing is getting done what is doable, what is possible. It doesn't do a lot of good, and people can spend a lot of time talking about things that can't get done. I can count votes. I can see what's going on. Look, my job is to get as much done as I can that will actually get done.
Gene Krebs, sounds like the governor's given up.
I can't argue that. At least on this topic, he understands what he's doing with inside the legislature. That is going to be, it's all about, you know, Second Amendment on this. And on the topic of all this, the thing that brought me up short, I was, you know, willing to give this some consideration until somebody pointed out to me, so you're a teacher, maybe a male teacher, with a gun in the hallway, because there's a shooter in the school, and the police come in. They're going to assume that you are the mass shooter going on here, and you're dead before you can say, I teach social studies.
Yeah.
This is why, if you look at other states who have done this, this is not going to be that widely adopted.
Sam, arming teachers, not a good idea?
I think it's the most absurd thing you can do. Teachers are teachers because they like teaching. People who want to carry guns have other occupations that they can go to. I don't think it's a good idea. And I always wondered to myself, but suppose two teachers got angry at each other and they have these guns at school, and it may be something sensitive about wives or something. I don't think that's a good idea. But I know how I came up with the formula of how to get rid of all these gun bills. I proposed to give 175,000 AR-15s to African-American males across this country, 175. And I propose to give them 5,000 rounds a year. Now, I suppose once you do that, all these gun rules will go away.
Darryl, I mean, it was right after the Dayton shooting. Nine people killed in, 34 seconds by a man with an AR-15. Strong Ohio was the name of Governor DeWine's modest gun regulations, red flag law, universal background checks, toughening the penalties for gun crimes. And that, he's basically saying, sorry, the lawmakers won't do it. I can't push it.
I mean, on one hand, it's Mike DeWine at being Mike DeWine, real politic here. You know, I can moan and groan about all this stuff, these other proposals that may or may not work, but if they're not getting through, why even mess with them? Why spend any political capital on try to, you know, ban assault weapons in Ohio or something like that? So from that standpoint, okay. His critics would say, where's your leadership on this, governor? And I guess he has the scars from Dayton. I was struck, Mike, by the cries. You know, we all remember that do something cry when the governor was in Dayton after that Oregon district mass shooting, maybe the day after. Those same cries, literally those same two words are being echoed in all these current, you know, in Texas and in Tulsa, and even in President Biden's speech the other night, do something. It's just, and I think everyone, perhaps on both sides, on all sides of this issue, are frustrated that nothing is being done.
Jeannie, you look at President Biden's speech this week. He faces the same hurdle that Governor DeWine does. He doesn't have the votes. Right. For sweeping gun reform. He can offer incentives to states to change their laws. That's, I guess, what the best they're hoping for in Congress. But he's putting his stake in the ground, saying we need an assault weapons ban, at least make it only for people 21 and over. We need universal background checks. Why can't Governor DeWine say, this is terrible, let's give it another shot?
Because I think what you're seeing is that people no longer know people who are not like themselves. Two things need to know. So in my rural part of Ohio, it takes, in best case situations, 25 minutes for the cops to get there when you call 911. I would not be surprised if it took 45 minutes for them to get there. So between 25 minutes and 45 minutes for them to get there, okay? Columbus takes 3 minutes usually for the cops arrive. There's a much more culture of arming yourself.
But how often are victims in the farm community, how much are those folks the victims of violent crime as someone who is in an inner city neighborhood?
I think part of that simply, I have to, and I mean this all due apologies to the media, is if it bleeds, it leads. Yeah. And so you turn on your local news, and what do you see? Oh, there was a shooting here. And people see that, and they think things are much more violent than what they are. In reality, homicide rates have gone down, but you try to explain that to people, and they look at you, oh, no, it's, you know, yeah.
Of course, they've grown up. They've gone up in many cities, including Columbus. Yeah. I don't know about rate, the total homicides. I guess I haven't looked at the rate.
Yeah.
But certainly Columbus set a record last year and this year.
And will continue as long as these weapons are available. People will continue to shoot people because they have these weapons. And it's one thing about city living that people don't really understand. The density of city living, the inability to have certain types of amenities like air conditioning. I didn't realize that until I discovered air conditioning out of my poverty. It calms you down. But if you're sitting on the porch and you're hot, and it doesn't take much. The other thing that is startling to me, when they look back on this part of history, they have to say a minority has determined this gun issue. Not a majority, because all of the polls say otherwise. Now, my final point on that says that our system is really, really messed up.
Is there a chance, Darryl? Now, there were some articles this week that show, yes, 90% of folks support, you know, 21-year-old age limit for AR-15s and universal background checks. But when they go to the polls, it's closer to 60%. Still a good majority, but it's not quite the 90 when people actually have to go to the polls and vote and support and vote on these things.
It's one of the perplexing things about this entire issue, isn't it? You look at the NRA, you know, on one side, you know, it's a great organization. The other side, it's the black hats. They've been politically weakened, a lot of internal fighting and all that, but they still have that clout. And it's not even necessarily the traditional campaign contributions I write about a lot, and, you know, Sam's group complains about a lot. It's just the ability to mobilize, and it's incredibly such an emotional topic that it often wins the day even without having at least a numerical majority.
It's the ranking. So during my four terms of the General Assembly, I got an A from the NRA ranking, except for my last term, they gave me an A-, and I asked them why, and they said, well, you asked too many questions. I can't make this stuff up.
One of the things that always bothers me about homicide and weapons and guns, people don't realize in that number, 54% are suicides.
Oh, that's the real problem. No, I mean, especially my guess is far more people in rural America are killed by suicide, by guns, by suicide than
I would have to imagine. I would have to agree with that. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it could very well be the case.
After that discussion, we moved on to the topic near and dear to our hearts, gerrymandering, redistricting reform. As you likely know, voters in August will use an unconstitutional map to pick candidates for the state House and the state Senate. That's because a federal court stepped in and ordered the state to use that map, the third of five maps ruled illegal by the Ohio Supreme Court. Sam Gresham of Common Cause Ohio was very active in winning voter approval of the new redistricting process that we have been using. And then he's been fighting to try to make sure lawmakers use that system to draw fair maps. So far, it does not look like it's working. So that left me to ask Sam, okay, now what?
They were who we expected them to be. Now, you've heard that phrase before. We expected them to disrespect the people of Ohio who gave 70 plus. We expected for them to play all these games with the process. And we expected that if the Ohio Supreme Court could not get them to work it out, that they would go to the federal court and they would get one of those judges to go for it. But what they did not anticipate, one, we have to start the process over next year. It's only a one year left.
One cycle, yep.
And they also have given us enough cannon fodder to put a media campaign together to say why they cannot be trusted to do this and put an independent commission in place.
So do you have to act on that now while this is top of mind and while people are paying attention?
No, we don't believe that. We need to put ourselves together for 24.
For 24.
And in 24, we've ginned up enough, and they've given us enough free publicity. I mean, and we got enough news footage that we can put together. I think we're going to beat them on this. Now, let me end this by saying, this is everything I anticipated that they would do.
Gene, is an independent commission the answer? Do you see that coming next?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think what we need to do is look to see what Michigan did, be able to do that. But there's another question, though, that has been puzzling me, and I'd like to know, why does State Auditor Keith Faber vote with the Democrats on these maps? And Keith is a very shrewd politician, and he sees something I don't think that LaRose and DeWine have seen on this yet. And I think there's something going on there.
I think his stated reason has been that he's against the maps because they didn't go far enough. They went too far toward the Democrats. Now, people may forget that reasoning and just remember the vote. So you may
yes.
be right.
It
may
yeah,
be.
He was saying they were gerrymandered. The Democratic districts were gerrymandered to
right,
make it fit.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, there's a point to that. When you can't have both. If you're going to try to go for the state overall balance as the constitutional amendment mandated, as the Supreme Court interpreted it. You're going to have to do that, you know, to come out with that overall proportion. But there are so many questions that are up in the air. Is the constitutional amendment that was passed in Ohio in 2015, I think, for the legislative, is that even in effect anymore?
Relevant.
Is that relevant, or are we just sort of in no man's land now? I mean, that was designed to happen after the census. Well, we've got one election in, as Sam points out, after the census has been taken care of now. Now we got 2024 maps for that year. Who decides? How does that work?
I think the answer is no. It's no man's land. We do until we do it, until we figure it out. I again point out the lawlessness, the total disregard for the Constitution. There's nothing sacred about it. I grew up in a time where the Constitution was sacred. You don't do that. And it also shows one thing. The pure political, ruthless grabs that Republicans use.
An independent commission, Gene, you mentioned Michigan, they have it. It's in place for this year. Outsiders have said it has created more fair maps for the state of Michigan, but it's still being challenged.
Yes. There's one more reform, too, that I think we need. And full disclosure, as always, I'm actively involved in the effort pro bono to bring ranked choice voting to Ohio. I got to tell you, that combined with fair maps solve a lot of problems we have here in Ohio from getting people of quality elected.
And not surprisingly, that map continues to cause chaos. That's because even though it was the third of five maps drawn over the past 5 months, even though it was just officially put in place last week, candidates had to file paperwork to run back in early February. That means lawmakers are living in new districts, running against incumbent lawmakers from their own party. Some districts don't even have candidates from one party or the other. Several lawsuits have been filed. The Ohio Supreme Court is considering what to do. A federal judge is considering what to do. We may get a new filing deadline. Candidates may have to move and move quickly. It's chaos. Who on earth could have predicted this? Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week, which goes to the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. This week it goes to the Ohio House for trying to start an international incident with Canada. Yes, Canada, our friendly neighbor to the north. What did Canada do? Well, during the height of COVID, it locked down churches and enforced those rulings with police who forced church leaders to stop holding religious services. Well, the Ohio House last week passed a resolution urging the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom to add Canada to a religious freedom watch list. Republican State Rep. Reggie Stultfuss of the Canton area said Canada's behavior is similar to what we see in communist-controlled China. Well, we admit we're not intimately familiar with Canada's constitution, but courts up there have ruled that the closings of churches was legal because Canada shut down all mass gatherings, not just religious ones. So because of the health emergency, they infringed on everyone's rights, not just religious rights. And, by the way, those churches have reopened. So for running out of wedge issues here in the United States and heading up to Canada to find one, the Ohio House gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That'll do it for this week. We urge you to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And until next week, for Steve Brown and our digital editor, Michael DeBonis, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.